I want to tell you a story. There once was a girl who lived in a little town in France, a quiet part of the world where nothing ever changed. Every morning began the same, with the same faces saying the same things, walking the same paths they had walked the day before. And while the village was content with its routines, and while the other girls dreamed of weddings and dinners and perfectly tidy lives, this girl dreamed of something more. She was the inventor's daughter. That alone made her strange in the eyes of the town. They'd see her carrying books through the town square, murmuring to herself, lips curling into quiet smiles no one else could understand. She didn't spend time chatting away like the others. She didn't flirt the way they were taught to. She read. She imagined. She asked too many questions. And worst of all, she didn't pretend to be any less than she was. They whispered about her, called her odd, said she was wasting her looks on ideas, wasting her time on stories. Because beauty is only acceptable when it's obedient, when it smiles and bows and says, yes, sir, but she never did. And no one hated that more than Gaston. He was the kind of man who didn't see people, especially women, as people, only prizes. He had a jaw like stone, a voice like thunder, and the kind of smirk that came from never being told no. Until her. She was the first no he couldn't break. The first girl who looked through him like he was paper. And he couldn't stand it. He wanted to marry her, to possess her, parade her like a trophy. And she was supposed to be grateful, of course. Everyone else would have been. But she just smiled politely and kept walking. She couldn't be caught. She wouldn't be owned. She lived a life full of books and solitude, pressed flowers and dreams. She was not unhappy, yet she was definitely waiting. For what, she didn't know. Something bigger, something grander. Something that would look at her, truly look, and see not just a girl, but a mind hungry for knowledge. And eventually, it found her. She never could have imagined it would happen like it did, though. One moment, she was standing in her little cottage, the smell of oil and steam still clinging to her father's coat as he embraced her goodbye. And the next, she was running through the forest in the middle of the night, heart pounding, hair wet from the mist, the cold pressing in like a breath against her neck. She didn't even have time to be afraid. She was only focused. Focused on following the path, on listening to the strange way the wind curved around the trees like it was telling her where to go. And there it was. The castle. It wasn't supposed to be real. It was something out of one of her books. Massive and ancient and glowing faintly from within, like it had been waiting for someone. Like it had been waiting for her. And as she stepped through the gates, something in her body shifted. It wasn't fear, it wasn't dread, just a stillness, the kind of quiet that feels like a hand gently taking yours and guiding you forward. The halls were empty but not silent. The castle made sounds of its own, breathing sounds, humming sounds, sounds like pages turning somewhere far away. She didn't call out because she didn't have to. She knew whatever she was searching for would find her first. And it did. She found her father locked away in the cold, afraid. Tired. He didn't belong there, so she begged. She offered herself instead. She traded away her life. That was the word she used, trade. But the castle heard something else. Because from that moment on, it wasn't a trade, it was a transformation. The door closed behind him and something inside her opened. A small door just behind her ribs. She told herself she was strong. She told herself she would find a way out. But deep down, she didn't really want to. As she listened to the sounds of the castle, she slowly grew more and more relaxed. And then the castle began listening back. The days didn't pass the way they used to. She stopped counting them. She stopped asking what time it was. She would wake, sometimes already dressed, her hair combed, a warm tray by her side. Sometimes the fire would already be lit. Sometimes she would hear music. Faint and strange, coming from a hallway she hadn't walked down yet. Then she began noticing things, such as how the doorknobs turned for her, even before she touched them, or how the candles near her flickered a little bit brighter when she spoke. Maybe even how the air changed in each room, not just in temperature, but also in tone, mood, almost as if the walls were trying to soothe her. She told herself it was just magic, just enchantment, but for some reason it felt personal. The mirrors began to show her things, not just her reflection, but how she moved, the way her body softened when no one was looking. the way her lips parted when she sighed, the way her eyes lingered on empty space, like something was speaking into her mind and she was just barely beginning to listen. She didn't know what it wanted, not yet, but she liked how quiet her thoughts had become, how soft the days were, how much easier everything felt when she didn't resist. And maybe, she thought, that's how it began. Not with a command, not with a curse, but with a kindness so gentle it couldn't be refused. In due time, she began to fall into a kind of rhythm. Not because she chose to, at least not consciously, but because everything around her began to anticipate her needs. The castle was alive, and it wanted her comfortable, predictable, well-kept. Meals arrived at the same time each day, warm and arranged to just so. When she sat, the chair softened. When she walked, the floor didn't creak. The shadows pulled back from her path like servants lowering their heads. Even her own movements changed. Her steps became slower. Her shoulders eased. She breathed differently now. Longer inhales, longer pauses, some unspoken music running under the stone. It felt good to stop rushing, to stop thinking so much, to let herself be guided by the things that appeared before her. For example, a ribbon laid out beside the mirror, or a brush she didn't remember placing. Even a dress, soft and blue with a white apron, waiting on the bed in exactly her perfect size. So naturally, she tried it on. Not because she had to, but just because it was there. And when the fabric slid over her skin, it felt like it belonged there more than anything she'd ever worn before. She caught her reflection then, in the mirror, and for a moment, she looked unfamiliar. Not wrong, exactly. Certainly not frightening. Just new. Calmer. Her lips slightly parted. She was breathing so slowly. Her spine was just a little bit straighter. Her expression was entirely unreadable. Not blank exactly, but more peaceful. She blinked once and then smiled. Not because anyone told her to, not because she had to, but just because it felt right. And then one day, she wasn't alone anymore. It happened like a shift in the weather, a drop in air pressure, a deep, all-consuming silence, the kind that makes the back of your neck prickle, not with fear, but with the certainty that something has changed. She felt him before she saw him. She felt it in her breath, the stillness that took root in her chest, the urge to sit up straighter without knowing why, the awareness of space, of distance, of being observed not just by the castle now, but by something inside it. And then he was there, at the edge of the room, the beast. She didn't speak, she didn't run, she just waited, because deep down she understood something she couldn't name. The castle had been preparing her for this moment. For him. He didn't speak at first, only stood there, watching her. His form was shadowed by the golden light of the room, barely moving, except for the rise and fall of his chest, slow, heavy, and restrained. She expected to be afraid. When she heard the stories, she had imagined claws, teeth, rage. But there was none of that. Only stillness, silence, and something behind his eyes that didn't look like danger. It looked like pain. She met his gaze and held it. For a moment, they simply looked at one another, not as captor and captive, not even as beast and girl, but as two people, two creatures, who had both been changed by the castle in ways they didn't fully understand. And then, with a voice like thunder, he asked her a question. Would she stay? Forever. She should have asked for more time to decide. She should have demanded terms and conditions. But the words never came, she only nodded. Because it didn't feel like she had a choice. It felt like the story had already written itself, and she was simply catching up to the part where she agreed to be his. And just like that, she was no longer a guest. She was a resident, and she belonged to him. At first, very little changed. She stayed in the same room, ate her meals at the same table, woke to the same soft light through velvet curtains. But there was a weight to the air now, a presence that filled the spaces between the furniture and between her thoughts. She knew he was near, even when he wasn't in sight. She could feel him in the hush of the corridors, in the pause between her footsteps. Sometimes she would enter a room and find that something had moved, just slightly. Perhaps a chair turned toward the door, or a book left open to a page that felt just a little bit too relevant. Even a single rose placed right beside her brush. He didn't visit often, not at first at least, but when he did, he never knocked. He would appear like dusk, sudden and soft, shadowed and steady. And when he spoke, it wasn't to demand, it was to question. Did you eat today? Did you sleep well? Will you join me for dinner? Everything was always phrased as a question, but something about the way he asked made the answers feel obvious. Yes? Of course. I will. She started saying yes without hesitation, because it felt easier than saying no. Because saying no required thinking, and thinking had become less necessary lately. She liked how quiet her mind was with him, how every day folded into the next, clean and identical, like pages in a book she had memorized. And when she sat across from him at dinner, she didn't feel afraid. She felt observed, measured even, known. And somehow that was worse. And somehow that was better. He didn't give her orders because he didn't have to. The castle had its own way of teaching, like a gentle redirection or a quiet suggestion, something that lingered until she got something right. She began to crave the warmth of the approval that radiated from the walls when she obeyed. Eventually, she began waking earlier, just in case he might appear. She brushed her hair more slowly, more carefully, not because anyone asked her to, but because the mirror seemed to reward her for it. The reflection that stared back at her looked calmer each day, prettier, more composed, like someone who had accepted her place in the story. She no longer wondered what would happen next. In fact, she no longer asked questions at all. And he noticed. He began staying longer at dinner, speaking more, still quiet, always gentle, but less guarded. Sometimes he'd tell her stories, just little things, such as childhood memories, dreams he'd had, things he used to believe in. The kind of stories people tell when they don't remember how to be people anymore, but they try anyways. She listened like she was being read to, nodding, smiling, forgetting to think about anything else. He watched her differently now, not with suspicion, but with hunger. It was something old, something heavy, like he had been waiting centuries for someone, for her. And when their eyes met across the table, she didn't look away. Instead, she tilted her head and smiled, not because she wanted something from him, but because she had started to want him. One evening at dinner, the meal was quiet, the way it always was, aside from soft clinking of silverware and the flicker of candlelight, the spaces between their words was almost more important than the words themselves. She could feel his attention on her as she stood to leave, could feel it settle on the curve of her shoulder, the way her hands smoothed the folds of her dress. And then, as she turned to go, he reached out, just one hand, slow, careful, fingertips brushing lightly against her wrist. It was nothing, really, barely even a touch, but it stopped her like a spell. She looked down at his hand, then up at him. He didn't speak, because in that moment, the room said everything for him. The air was thicker, the silence between them was deeper. The castle itself seemed to hold its breath. His hand was warm, not rough, but steady. And in that moment, she realized just how much she had missed being touched. No one had held her gently in so long. No one had ever asked her to stay without saying a word. She could have pulled away, could have stepped back. But instead, she let him hold her wrist, let him study the soft skin there, let him have that moment, because it was just as much hers as it was his. And then slowly, her other hand reached up, not to touch him, not yet, just to still herself. Because something inside her had shifted again. Not her thoughts, those had gone quiet long ago, but her desire. It was beginning to bloom. The touch wasn't spoken of again after that, but something between them had absolutely changed. He began appearing more often, not just at meals, but during the quiet hours of the day too, walking beside her through the garden paths, standing with her in the library, watching from across the room as she read books she no longer really needed to understand. The castle began to respond to them differently, too. The music returned. At first, it was faint, just a distant melody winding through the halls like a faraway memory. Then it got closer, became clearer. It was the kind of song meant for movement, for intimacy, for something ritual and tender and slow. And so one evening, the Beast asked Belle to dance. He didn't use those words, of course. He simply extended his hand to her. The same hand that had touched her wrist. She looked at it, then at him, and without speaking, she took it and stepped forward. Her body moved before her mind could protest, though there was very little mind left to resist. She was all warmth and instinct now, trained by quietness, softened by care. He pulled her gently against him, one hand at her waist, the other holding hers, and the music surrounded them, curling like smoke around their feet as they began to sway. He guided her with such care. He wasn't forceful or demanding. He was certain, and so she followed, instinctively, gracefully. It was as if she was always meant to be led. She didn't try to anticipate his next step because she didn't need to. The rhythm was already inside her. The castle had made sure of that. They danced for a long time. Maybe hours, maybe minutes. Time moved differently in the castle. Here, it was soft and slow and circular, like the turn of her body against his. She didn't think, she didn't plan. She simply moved, letting him guide her, letting the music carry her. His hand on her waist was firm now, not possessive, but protective, like he was holding something valuable, like he was holding something that belonged to him. And then the music began to fade. Not all at once, but like a candle burning low. The melody thinned, softened, dissolved into silence. But he didn't let her go, and she didn't pull away. They stood like that, still and close and breathing into each other. Then she looked up, and when she did, his eyes were already on her. He didn't lean in. Instead, he waited and watched, let her come to him. And so she did. Slowly, like turning the page of a book, she tilted her head back, lips parted just slightly, breath warm between them. She was not asking, was not begging. Instead, she was offering herself entirely to him. And when he kissed her, it was his way of claiming her. She moaned softly, sighing. It was a deep, yielding sound that carried every question she no longer needed to ask. And when the kiss ended, she didn't speak. She simply pressed her forehead to his chest and let her body rest against his. She was finally where she belonged. Later that evening, he led her through the halls, offering his hand. She took it without thinking. Of course she took it. They walked in silence, her bare feet soundless on the stone. The castle was darker now, quieter than usual, as if it too were waiting, as if it understood that something sacred was about to be shared. He brought her to a smaller room she had never seen before. There was no grand chandelier, no dramatic drapery, just firelight and stillness. And in the center, a single red rose encased in glass. She felt it before she understood it. The weight in the room, the ache in his body. Then finally, he spoke. "This is what binds me," he said, voice low and thick with painful memory. "This is what ruined me." She didn't interrupt, she didn't ask questions. She simply moved in closer. He told her everything then, about the curse that turned him into the beast, about the years of separation and silence and shadows, about the pain of being something almost human, and the fear of never being anything else ever again. And through it all, she stayed, still, soft, and listening. When he was finished, he turned to her. "I didn't want you to know," he said, "because I didn't want you to stay out of pity." She shook her head, not in disagreement, but in devotion. "I'm not staying out of pity," she whispered. "I'm staying because I must." Then, without needing permission, she knelt, right there in front of him, in front of the rose, in front of everything he had been too ashamed to show. She lowered herself to the ground with grace and a delicate reverence, not to beg, not to plead, but to prove herself. Her willingness to give herself up to him in whatever way he may wish to have her. The castle seemed to exhale around them, and the rose began to bloom. He simply looked down at her, silent, eyes heavy with something vast and unspeakable. She knelt beneath that gaze without shame, without question, and without a single part of her wishing to be anywhere else. His hand moved slowly, almost trembling, as he reached for her, his fingers brushing along her cheek, down her jaw, tilting her face upward until her eyes met his once more. "You don't know what you're offering," he said softly. "I don't need to," she replied, and she meant it. He stepped closer, close enough that she could feel the heat radiating off of his body, close enough that his breath stirred the wisps of hair at her temple. His fingers slid into her hair, not to pull, not to hold, but to anchor him to her, and she leaned into the touch like it was gravity. I could ruin you, he murmured. Then ruin me, she breathed. And that was the moment he took her. It wasn't violent, wasn't all at once. It was slow, deliberate, as if every movement was a verse in the spell the rose had been waiting for. He stood, watching, waiting. And then she spoke, voice so quiet it could have been a prayer. Please tell me what to do. He closed the distance between them with one step. Kneel again, he said, voice deeper now, rough with reverence. But this time, do it because you belong to me. She obeyed, slowly and beautifully. There was no hesitation nor fear, just a girl who had spent her whole life searching for something to give herself to. And now she had found it. As she knelt for him a second time, the rose above them shed its first petal. And he knew. So did she. She knelt before him, soft and open and still, her eyes lowered, her hands resting in her lap. No tension, no pride, just presence. And he watched her like one might watch the first snowfall of winter, silent and awed, knowing it would melt eventually, thus wanting to savor every perfect second. Then, slowly, he reached for her again. His fingers wove into her hair, with worship, ownership, desire. Come to bed, he said. It wasn't a command. It wasn't even a request. It was just a truth that had been waiting to be spoken. She rose, graceful and slow, and let him lead her. The bed was large, dark, carved from heavy wood. The sheets were velvet. The pillows were soft and wide and cool to the touch. Everything smelled faintly of cedar and smoke. He helped her climb into it like she was something delicate and precious, like he was afraid she might vanish if he moved too quickly. Once she was settled, on her back, hair spread like ink across the pillows, he laid beside her and just watched. She turned her head to face him. They said nothing for a long time. Then he reached out again, sliding one hand over her belly, then higher, splaying his palm over her chest like he was feeling her heartbeat from the outside. Do you feel it? He asked. She nodded. The castle, she whispered. No, he said. Me. Her breath hitched. His fingers spread slightly, pressing just enough to feel her rise and fall with every inhale. And then, without lifting his hand, he spoke again. Let me show you how I want you to breathe. She nodded again and obeyed. Of course she obeyed. He counted her through each inhale, each exhale. Slower. Deeper. One. Two. Three. Just like that. Three. Two. One. Until her pulse matched his. Until her body softened into the mattress like wax. Until her eyes fluttered closed in surrender. And then he whispered her name. Once. Like a spell. Like a promise. Belle. And when she opened her eyes again, something in her had once again changed. She wasn't just Belle anymore. She was his. Entirely. He didn't rush. He simply let his hand rest there for a moment longer. Fingers splayed across her chest like he was keeping time with the rhythm he'd created inside her. And then, gently, he began to explore her body. Not as a man desperate to take, but as a creature that had waited too long to be this close to something so beautiful and so willing. His hand slipped lower, fingers tracing the curve beneath her breast, the soft skin of her waist, the dip of her hips. He touched her like she was already his, because she was. And she let him, breath steady, lips parted. She didn't need to be told to stay still. She stayed still because it pleased him, and pleasing him made something inside her feel so good. It felt good to be admired. It felt good to be seen. It felt good to be touched, not as a girl to conquer, but as something sacred to care for. His mouth followed his hand, eventually pressing kisses over her collarbone, her shoulder, the inside of her wrist. And every time his lips met her skin, she sighed as if she could be undone from his kisses alone. Belle's eyes were half-lidded now, her body quiet and receptive, not because she'd been trained, but because she'd been chosen, and because she knew what a gift that was. She arched slightly into his hand as it moved between her thighs, not to urge him, but to show him that she was ready, that she understood what was needed of her. She wanted to be made into more than just a girl. She wanted to be made into his girl. He didn't push nor pull because he didn't need to. She had already given him everything he might have asked for. The parting of her thighs, the arch of her back, the open softness of her mouth. It was clear she had been waiting for this. Not the act itself necessarily, but the meaning of it. To be touched in a way that said, I see you. To be taken in a way that meant, you belong here. His fingers slipped between her thighs, slow and steady, finding the heat that had bloomed there for him alone. She gasped, quiet, startled by her own aching need. But still she didn't dare to move. And when he pressed deeper, her hips rolled instinctively, welcoming him with a grace that felt ancient, like her body had always known how to do this for him, like she was made for this moment. Belle let her eyes fall shut again as he kissed her throat, the curve of her jaw, the delicate part of her shoulder. His hand never left between her legs, fingers curling and rubbing in slow, loving circles, learning her, praising her, rewiring her. She moaned his name, Beast. It was a sound full of trust, of offering, of lust. And when she whispered, please, barely audible, it wasn't begging, it was permission. He pulled back just enough to look at her. Her hair was a halo against the velvet, lips parted, chest rising and falling in slow, devotional rhythm. She looked ruined already, and he hadn't even entirely taken her yet. Good, he whispered. And then he moved down her body. Not fast, not greedy. He kissed every inch as he descended. Her ribs, her belly, the insides of her thighs, where her skin trembled with need. His hands opened her with the care of someone turning the pages of an old book. And when his mouth finally met her wetness, slow, warm, reverent, he cried out so softly it barely broke the silence. It was delicate, like the sound belonged to the castle itself. Every flick of his tongue matched the rhythm he'd trained into her body. Every sigh, every twitch, every soft moan was another thread being pulled loose from the last pieces of the girl she used to be. She was nothing but devotion and pleasure now. Soft, dripping, undone. When she came, it wasn't loud, but it was deep. She let out a low, shuddering gasp as her body seized and melted all at once. It was like her soul had been coaxed out of her trembling body. And still he didn't rush. He rose slowly, kissed her lips again, let her taste what she'd given him, and then laid beside her, brushing the hair from her face like she was something rare and fragile. She didn't speak, because her body said everything words would have been otherwise unable to. She slid down the bed without thinking, moved between his thighs. She met his gaze and held it, wide-eyed and reverent, as her hands worked to free him. And when she took him into her mouth, it wasn't to please him. It was to serve him. To finish what they'd started. To complete the ritual. Her lips parted around him with grace, her tongue curling with practiced ease, her moans low and unhurried. He groaned above her, hand resting in her hair, not to control her, but to thank her. She moved with confidence now, like she knew what he liked and needed, like she knew this was her purpose. And when he came, deep, guttural and beautiful, she didn't flinch. She swallowed him like a promise, like she was sealing her fate. When it was over, she returned to his arms, warm and loose and glowing with the kind of softness that can't be faked. He held her like she was sacred, because she was. And somewhere above them, unseen and eternal, the rose shed another petal. They didn't speak for a long time. Instead, her head rested on his chest, one leg draped across him, his hand idly stroking the curve of her back. The room had gone quiet, the fire low. The world felt smaller now, softer, just the two of them and the rhythm of their breathing. His fingers moved slowly, down her spine, over her shoulder, into her hair again. Reassuring, possessive, soothing. You did well, he whispered. Her breath caught just slightly. Perfect, in fact, he added. You gave me everything. And she had. Every thought, every muscle, every inch of her body. And now she lay there in the aftermath. Not empty, but full. Saturated. Complete. He brought her hand to his lips. Kissed each knuckle in turn. You don't have to think anymore, he murmured. You've already become what you were meant to be. She felt it in her chest. A slow release. A settling. His voice moved through her like warm water. low, slow, and certain. The same rhythm he'd used to guide her breath, to train her, to take her.
"You were made for this," he whispered. "To be seen, to be touched, to be mine."
She didn't respond. He pressed a kiss to her temple.
"You're mine," he breathed.
And the words didn't just land on her skin, they sank into her bones. Her breath deepened, her body softened further. She curled into him without thought, without will, just instinct, just rightness.
"You don't have to try," he said. "You don't have anything to prove. Just stay mine."
His fingers slowed, his voice grew quieter, like a spell meant only for her ears.
"Every breath you take now reminds you who you belong to. Every time you close your eyes, the castle will remind you what you are. Every time you wake, you'll remember how it felt to kneel before me."
She was drifting, floating, not asleep, not quite. And above them, the rose did not shed another petal. Instead, it glowed. The next morning was a cold one. The fog hadn't lifted yet, and the castle still wore its hush like a robe. Belle was curled in bed beside the beast, half asleep, her body sore in the sweetest ways, her mind wrapped in the stillness he had trained into her. Then the ground began to shake. It was subtle at first, a tremble in the floorboards, a shiver in the glass. Then the mirrors started whispering. Then the windows darkened. The castle knew what was coming. And so did he. He rose first, quicker than she'd ever seen him move. He didn't speak as he took off down the stairs. She followed close behind. By the time they reached the main hall, the sky was filled with smoke. Down below, beyond the gates, a mob had formed. Torches, screaming, guns. And at the front of it all, of course, was Gaston. His face was twisted with rage, his mouth full of lies, claiming he'd come to save Belle, claiming she'd been bewitched, claiming the beast was a monster. But the only thing monstrous was the sound of the mob's boots against the damp earth. And Belle felt nothing but fury, because they didn't understand. They didn't care to see or understand her. Not in the way the beast did. They couldn't possibly. They viewed her as stolen, as salvageable. But she wasn't a damsel in distress. It was an honor to belong to him, and she would not let them take that away from her. The castle braced itself. Doors were locked, windows were sealed. It was alive now, fully awakened and ready to protect what belonged to it. But the mob came anyway. Gaston led them through the gates with violence in his eyes, and Belle saw something in him. It wasn't bravery, it was cowardice. Because he wasn't here to save her. He was here to punish her for choosing someone he couldn't become. The beast stood at the top of the grand staircase, silent. He didn't roar, he didn't lunge. He simply stood, tall and still, as the firelight danced over his shoulders and the soft breath of Belle's presence anchored him. "Get away from him," she shouted, voice echoing through the marble hall. "You don't know what you're doing." Gaston sneered. "He's bewitched you, Belle. He's turned you into something unnatural." "No," she said. "He turned me into myself." But it was too late. The gun fired. The beast flinched, stumbled. His body twisted in pain as the bullet tore through him. He dropped to his knees with a sound that was more heartbreak than roar, and Belle ran to him. Of course she ran to him. She dropped beside him, arms around his massive frame, tears streaking her cheeks as her hands pressed to his chest, desperate, trembling, trying to keep him there. "I'm not leaving you," she whispered. "Do you hear me? I'm not letting you go. I chose you." He looked at her, eyes wide, wet, full of wonder.
"Belle."
She kissed him. Not gently, not sadly, but with everything she had left. And in that moment, something ancient cracked open. The rose, high above them, glowing with its final petal, began to pulse with light. The castle trembled again, but this time with relief, and the beast began to transform. It was slow, painful, beautiful. His fur receded, his hands softened, his horns dissolved like mist. He was still him, but human now. And when he opened his eyes again, he wasn't gasping. He wasn't afraid. He was hers, entirely. Gaston and the others fled. Cowards always do. The castle closed its gates, locked the world out, and let the silence settle again.
And Belle, still kneeling, still shaking, felt a change inside herself once again. She wasn't a girl anymore, not a daughter, not an outcast, not a prize. She was a woman who had chosen darkness and been chosen by it in return. She helped him stand, held his hand as they walked back into their chambers. And that night, as the castle wrapped them in quiet, the rose bloomed fully for the first time. Not for salvation, not for love, but for devotion returned. Time passed differently in the castle after that. The walls grew warmer, the halls longer, the light softer. The mirrors quieted. The rose, now in full bloom, sat untouched beneath its glass, neither wilting nor withering. It had nothing more to count down. Its purpose was complete. And so was Belle's. The couple lived not as rulers, but as keepers of the stillness they'd built together. There were no crowns, no servants, no names spoken aloud. Just two souls wrapped in ritual and rhythm and reverence. She still knelt for him. He still kissed her palms. And in the quietest hours of the night, they'd lie together in the great velvet bed, her back against his chest, his breath steady on the nape of her neck, neither of them speaking because there was nothing left to prove. The truth rested comfortably around them, that she had not been rescued, she had not been tamed, she had never been lost. She had surrendered.
And that was what had saved them both.